Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Studies Center and the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. This is the interview with Mr. George Tom on April 21st, 1979. Tape 1, interview by Mr. Stanley Lau. This is the duplicate from a 90-minute tape to a 60-minute tape.
Most important families in Los Angeles at the time that you remember.
Okay. Well,
in the herbalist,
being in the herbalist line, though, most of the families I would be acquainted with are the herbalists. There's Zhong Yehong, that's Y.H. Chung. Of course, my cousin, Tom Pittman, Tom Pui Hin, which is also a cousin, that's Richard Paul and Herbert and May and Mary and the Su family, Pete Su's father. He was blind, but they were living in China, a very well-known family. Gerald Tom, I know whether you remember Gerald Tom or not. Their family was famous, or Thomas in L.A. And Wu Chuk, Wu Hayes, and there's a Guan Sun Zhen, that's they had the import-export business down in Los Angeles Street, it was very big. Tommy Kwan family, the United Meat Company. And see now, trying to think of Chong Gi, that's an old grocery store. And Cherry Follow, St. Kwan, I know the Kwan something, I don't recall that now, but the Tui, Cherry Follow. They used to be in Alameda Street on the corner upstairs. And of course, Wing Chun Long in 19th San Pedro, Dickus Tom, Sam Hum. Of course, his father is the one that started the business. Here's a Xing Wong, there's a Wong, can't think of the name of that store, it's been closed quite a few years now. It was on the 9th in San Pedro area also, and the Sun opened one down in Adams in San Pedro. I don't really know him, an electrical engineer. No wall, same wall. And then, as I recall,
King Wong, isn't it?
Yeah, King Wong, right, his father. Got a short, I don't recall the name of the store right now, it's close.
You seem sure, wasn't it?
Guangying something, Guangying something. The Chung family had the meat shop on not Alpine, but Ord, I guess. And some of the George Lem's family. That's the problem because the Lem's Cafe. And there's a Chung family that was Far East restaurant all the time. And there's Sam Gong Lao and Yat Gong Lao. Those are Chinese. They're also Chungs. I'm trying to recall them. Oh. Well, of course, your father was in the herb business too. And learned, I think, worked with my granddad. And that's about all I can recall right now.
Right. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of jobs were most Chinese doing before World War II?
Well, before World War II, I think you really had to go maybe a couple of years before World War II, because the war effort, I think, was started already, so there was a lot of Chinese being hired that were out of school. But prior of maybe 5 years before World War II, most of the Chinese were either working as in the restaurant business or laundry business, and maybe a houseboy or something like that. This might keep me apart. It was very hard to get a job. I know after in 36 when the department let me go because I didn't have a permanent job, but I did work a couple of months. I went to try to get a job at Western Electric. And of course, during Depression, it was very hard. But they wouldn't even talk to you because you're Oriental. There's no work. So my feeling is there are very few Chinese people that work for American people hired prior to World War. But when the war effort came along, there were more and more engineers hired. I think I remember like George Chu. I don't know whether you know George Chu or not. And the father had forbidden that palace. I think was he's a MIT graduate, but it was a bit difficult for him to get a job. And so he tried to open up a manufacturing place to manufacture bicycles. It didn't work out. So he had to go back and manage the father's restaurant business.
Wasn't Paul, Tom, one of your cousins, a graduate chemist?
Yeah, he's a pharmacist.
A pharmacist?
Youngest.
And Einstein, did he have trouble getting started at the beginning?
Yeah, right. He did. Well, Peter Lee, I think it was, opened a herb store on a corner across from the plaza, I think right on the corner there. And Paul, I think, went to work for him.
That's on the southeast corner, I think.
Was on the southwest corner.
Southwest corner.
Yeah, southwest corner. The plaza's here and there's a group of buildings right here.
Yeah.
And the herb store was right on the corner.
Wasn't there a drugstore, a solar fountain on the southeast corner?
Now, the southeast corner, there was really not much of a corner. That's Ferguson Alley, as a matter of fact.
Well, later on, but you're right. So it's the southwest corner we're talking about is L.A. Street.
Yeah, L.A. Street, right.
We're talking about the same pharmacy.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's fine. Let's talk about jobs that were... Chinese were engaged.
Wait. A half hour is up.
Okay, let's talk about income in the pre-World War II period. What would you consider to be an average income in those days?
Average income, well, it's hard to say.
What were you making, for example, back in...
39, 1939, $90 a month. And I don't think much of the engineers are making too much more than that, because I was working at the test lab at the time, and I thought $90 a month was real good. Before that, I worked at the Vaughn's grocery store, and sort of remember 18 to 20, maybe $22 a month tossing vegetables around. I worked in a motor rewind shop or less than that. And when you say average, I really couldn't, I have
right,
no feel for
it's
it.
It's difficult. Yeah,
right,
but would you consider that you were better off than most people, or worse off than other people, or what? Did you feel your income was something that, so far as compared to your need for food and utilities and rent and what have you, did you feel that you have adequate income for that, or was it not?
Well, I was sort of breadwinner, and along with mom, and we had this big house. I think we were just making it. It just couldn't buy. We really never had any big savings, put it that way, as I recall. Mm-hmm. We never had a big savings. Mm-hmm. But almost like living day to day, you might say. Of course, we were skimp because we could buy day-old bread from the local bakery in the old days. I think 5 cents a loaf or something like that, all cut. I can remember donuts, maybe day-old donuts, 15 cents, 20 cents a dozen, something like that. People won't believe it if you tell them that.
All right. What did the people do with the money save, if they did save it? Did they put it into financial institutions like banks, or did they keep it in this tin box, or did they gamble with it? Did they try to invest it in other enterprises? What's your feeling as you recall back to the report?
Well, I think sure that most everybody had some kind of goal that they wanted to achieve, maybe buy a house. So they would save probably for a house. But in the old days, the average person really didn't have that much money to own a place. I would say the gambling. The gambling, as I recall, as a youngster, when I worked in the restaurant, was mostly confined to the workers, the cooks and the waiters, using my deal and stuff like that. They would gamble their money away. But I think the people that were in business, like they had their own laundry and some of that, had probably a different avenue. They were the ones that tried to make school and buy them. Of course, ourselves, we were just poor workers, and we didn't have that much to say.
So far as the other Chinese, do you feel that they live together in the same area because of necessity or choice or? As the neighborhood changed, do you think that they would want to move to stay with Chinese, or what was the feeling if you remember back in those days? Did Chinese tend to congregate next to one another?
Yeah, I think the Chinese tend to want to congregate. Well, they eat, a certain way. They use chopsticks, which are the Occident in. We sort of congregate too. I mean, we live next door to our cousin. We're in the big family. So we're sort of like a little outlying Chinese community.
Wasn't there a migration? Wasn't there at one time, say, 9th Street, there were people living in that area, and then there was a movement to the 26th Street area? And people sort of went there. They sort of follow one another in a way?
Yes, I would say they generally, one Chinese family would move into an area, then pretty soon there would be a few more that coming in later. Mm-hmm. It's just like when I moved to 52nd and Broadway, the YA, the Jung Yong, they bought a place in 48th Street, just off of Broadway in Maine. And then when later on, Pico and Union area was getting bad, and then I had a little money because I worked for the department. In 1940, I bought a house at 52nd and Broadway for $7,000. And that was a place that my mom lived until the 60s.
Now, when you said about Broadway, $7,000, was that total price? Or did
yeah, total price.
You paid cash then?
No, I didn't. I had a scound. I think I had about $800 cash. I borrowed $600. That was $1,400 down. And I have an FHA loan for the remainder. She hated to move out of the house because she lived there so long. My mother was pretty heartbroken when she moved out of there. But I'm sure she's much happier now where she's at.
Let's talk a bit about Chinese and politics. In the days before World War II, what were the attitude of Chinese towards, so far as politics go? Did they were they oriented to this country in terms of American politics, or is it politics of old China, or they didn't care at all, or what?
My feeling was that they were oriented to the politics of China, through Kuomintang and stuff like that. There are a few, like the ones that were in CCA, that were just kind of getting their feel in American politics. Personally, being a city worker, I did not really get involved in politics because in the old days, the ruling was that no politics. So I've been very non-committal about my political feelings, and as a matter of fact, even my religious feelings at work. I seldom talk about it. But I do have the impression that most of them were Republicans, but I guess the ones that joined CACA, most of them were in their own business. There were a few Democrats, but they didn't really show their, like Billy Liu and myself were Democrats, and of course, Y.C. Hong, very strong in the politics of CACA, wouldn't probably ever condone the idea of letting them out of the Republican regime.
That's right. Yeah. So you'd say at the very beginning then, for those people who were professionals or those people who were educated in this country, there was a tendency to become more Republican.
Yes.
Than Democrats. Right. But for the most part, the Chinese community didn't really care about American politics.
Yes.
They were just more oriented towards Chiang and his regime.
Right. That's the way I could recall it.
Now, at that particular time, did you feel that Chinese had, an obligation from their standpoint to China? Were there those that still had families in China that you were supporting? Or were they just, at that time, mostly Americanized in their way?
Well, I think most of them that came over, I've always had a feeling and I'm going to get a nest egg, and I'm going to go back to the old country and really live a life at Riley. And I think my granddad felt that way also. So they're trying to work here, save some money, or they send money back. And most of them don't even see the money anymore because the people in back there spend it all. And I know families that had that problem. So that's basically the old-timers that came over. They wound up making us, they can go back and retire. Now, the youngsters like myself, we grew up here, we didn't really have that kind of a feeling. We're American, we're citizens, we're born here, so this is our home.
Did you have any relatives in China?
Yes. Yes, I had, my father's brothers were in China. One of them still in Hong Kong.
Did you ever communicate with them?
Not that much, no. We, being widowed family, we were not part of the sort of, we were outlying, always involved.
How about the Chinese in Los Angeles in the Depression days? How did they survive?
Well, I guess survived because they, I guess they had their own trade, you know, to buy Chinese groceries and stuff like that. They, as I recall, import-export business. It wasn't easy, but like I want to sell tea door to door on weekend.
Chinese tea?
Yes.
To whom?
Door to door.
Everybody.
Yeah, wherever. Well, let's see, Richard, Ed Lee, William Lee, Lincoln, Leung, myself, the four of us, we'd get in the car and we'd go, say, we'd take LA High School area, and we'd go door to door. We'd sell Wok Cha, Sohing, Oolong. We have 1 pound candy ginger, jaw sticks. You used to buy a pack of 10 for 10 cents, and you'd sell one pack for 10 cents. So look at it.
So you made a pretty good
yeah.
Living that way.
Candy ginger, 9 cents, maybe up to 15 cents, they sell for 25 cents. Well, Hopchong, I think, paid $2 or $3 a tin, and you sell each package for 10 cents. So, there was, of course, there are better packages there, even like Jasmine.
So far as the feeling towards Chinese in Los Angeles, that time, what was the general public's attitude? Acceptance? Hostile? Supportive or what?
Well, I guess as long as you didn't encroach here and everything was peaceful. I mean, I didn't recall any real bad incidents that I know about as far as Chinese is concerned.
Well,
I don't think that we have the same problem that at that time as the Chicanos have right now. Maybe we're not rabble-rousers or what, I don't know.
Well, could
the Chinese people more peaceful or more inward? They don't go out and try to encroach on people. They don't push themselves on.
Well, could you go to any place in Los Angeles, for example? Restaurants, hotels, dance, ballroom places?
I would say no, you couldn't. The Bimini, I can recall Bimini. We hear about, because when we hear about, they don't accept you, so we don't go.
The
we don't
Bimini,
antagonize it, you know.
Bimini, that's all about Beverly and...
well, it's on Vermont.
Vermont.
And, yeah, right.
And that was a swimming pool.
That's right.
Very popular
even, the Olympic diving champ couldn't get in.
Oh, yes,
Sammy Lee.
That's true for other places as well.
Oh, I would say yes. But gradually, somehow or another, they accepted. Very slow, but when you hear about it, you don't go out and make that much trouble. And I think this is one of the things about Chinese attitudes, because it's not the same.
Would you say this decrease attitude of the whites towards the Chinese, that this decrease came after World War II?
Yes, I would say after World War II, right.
So World War II is really a turning point so far as many of the job opportunities and social acceptance of whatever it is.
Yes, right. Although I never felt the real... I've never had that kind of a problem. Like when I came to work for the department, I've always been accepted by my fellow workers. I did my job. And they see that I do the job, so I never considered myself as yellow face or anything like that. When I'm working on the job, the whole thing is we've got to get work together and get the job done.
Was there any resentment of you on the job, or jealousy of you on the job?
No. No, I roll up my sleeve and do the same as they.
Well, have you ever heard the comparison of Chinese with Jewish people when they're doing business? Have you heard people making these type of comparisons in the past?
Not really, but I have heard different sayings, you know, that Jewish people, they like you with Chinese.
Okay, let's move on to these questions, which have been called cultural attitudes. First of all, about wives. You're married.
Yeah.
When did you get married?
1947.
How did you meet your wife?
No, 1949. Excuse me.
1949. And when did you, how did you meet your wife?
Well, I met my Claire on several different occasions. She was going to school at USC. I knew her there. I also knew, I was acquainted with her brother. He was in the same outfit as I was in 555. And I guess the boat landed in, when we came back from overseas, it landed in Seattle. So I had more opportunity to get acquainted with Claire. She's, New LA area too, but she was studying in USC.
You know, you were introduced to her by her brother?
I was introduced to her down here at different occasions. I was working at USC as a research assistant with the NACA project at the engineering building that evening. And of course, I knew a lot of USC students. I guess, you know, dances and some of that. But,
was it a long courtship?
Well, I wouldn't really say long, maybe a couple of years. I don't recall.
And where was Claire born?
Claire was born in Seattle, Washington.
And what about your friends? How did they meet their wives? And that is your men friends in general. Did you say they met the same way, or was there any other ways?
Well, I kind of, getting back to this meeting girls, during my days of going to school and coming up, it always appeared that the Chinese girls here in Los Angeles didn't seem to like the LA boys or something. I mean, I don't know why I say that, but that's the feeling I recall at that time. It was very difficult to get acquainted with the Chinese girl. So most of it was arranged, really, in a way. I would say that the older folks said, you know, we should get George to get acquainted with so-and-so's daughter. Mm-hmm. And I would say that's the way it was done most of the time.
Did any of your friends go back to China to get married?
Yes, I had quite a few of them. Some of my high school chums did that.
And that was prior to World War II then?
Oh, yes.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, Steve Wong did that. And,
what were the reasons? Is it because difficulty in meeting American-born Chinese women, or because they wanted someone with the same cultural background? Or
I think that was a... They like to have somebody with the same cultural background. Mm-hmm. Somebody you can communicate with easily.
So far as American-born Chinese, were they just as eager to have sons rather than daughters as parents, as their parents did?
Well, I can't help but rub off because you raise a certain way. They always like to have a boy. They're the number one, like you say, number one son. I feel that it's still an inbred or something, whatever, can help it.
And what about your family? How many children do you have?
I have a boy and a girl, and the boy is number one. He's the first one.
Do you favor the boy?
No, I don't really think I do. No. But it's just inbred thing about the traditions of Chinese, you know, the Oriental tradition or the Chinese tradition.
What's your feeling about interracial marriage?
Well, it's inevitable the way I see it. It's coming. Can't help it.
So far as when you were a youngster, were there interracial dating going on at that time? Was it prevalent, common? Was it something that...
No, it wasn't common. If it happened,